Well, Pope Francis has received the resignation of Cardinal Worrell, and many of us were wondering if Cardinal Worrell would be removed from his office as Archbishop Cardinal of Washington, D.C., and if it would be a disgraceful removal. And with the publication of the Pope's letter to Worrell, it shows that Cardinal Worrell is being honorably discharged from the Archdiocese of D.C. and will remain on the Congregation for Bishops and will remain a cardinal. To discuss that timeline and these recent events surrounding Cardinal Worrell, I have Timothy Gordon with me. Timothy, welcome back.
Good day, sir. Thank you.
So before we dive in Pope Francis's letter to Cardinal Worrell, I want to give everybody a review on the timeline. So all of this began with Worrell back in August. August 14th, the Pennsylvania grand jury report was released. It mentioned Cardinal Worrell, then Bishop Worrell, about 200 times. And he was basically tied up with all of this sludge and disgusting child abuse and adult abuse and all kinds of sexual perversion. And it seemed that he had overlooked things and that he had paid money, for example, in one case with a priest who was a child pornographer, all sorts of horrible things. But then the cardinal, he went on CNN and he made his interview. Do you remember that, Timothy?
Yeah, I do.
And also during that week, do you remember when the diocese released what's called the Worrell Report, and that was a website vindicating Cardinal Worrell, and that turned out to be paid for by the Archdiocese as well, and it was removed pretty quick. And then that was all in, what, late August, Timothy?
Yeah, late August, rounding out the month, yeah.
And, you know, if my memory serves me right, I think Cardinal Worrell went to Rome twice to meet with the Pope, and allegedly asked the Pope to accept his resignation. And then finally, on October 12th, the Pope accepted his resignation and issued a letter, which we're going to look at today, especially the key paragraphs in that. And then I just saw this morning as we were waking up that Worrell has an advertisement on CNN. You've seen that one, Timothy. What's it read?
Pope recognizes accomplishments of Cardinal Worrell as he accepts resignation.
Right. So this whole resignation is not for anything wrong that he's done in Pennsylvania or in D.C. regarding McCarrick. This is just a big fiesta. It's a big party celebrating the legacy of Worrell. So what do you think about all this, the story from August to October?
I think that this pontificate and this curia has brought the maxim of one of the two major political parties in American politics, which is never let any catastrophe go to waste, to a new sort of height, or depending on where you look at it, low, because now the Vatican is using its own self-made catastrophes toward its laudits, which I've never even Rahm Emanuel, who's the author of that original expression, would not have dared to think that you could do that with your own catastrophes if they're of your own make. So this is a new level of audacity from an already audacious, papal curia.
Yeah, I'm blown away by it. I really did think that Worrell was going to go down and that the Pope Francis and the curia were just going to say, well, we've just got a scapegoat Worrell. Unfortunately, he's a friend of ours, but there's no way to rehabilitate him. You know, let's just put our sights on Supich and on Tobin and Newark, and let's just rebuild what we got. We got a good thing going there. Unfortunately, Worrell's out. I was so wrong on that. They saved Worrell so far. And there's the 1-2 punch. There was the PA grand jury report, and that was pretty bad because money was exchanged. Secret things were done. And Pope Francis recognized this when he says some mistakes were made. We'll look at that in a moment. And then right after that, Archbishop Vigano did his first testimony, the 11-pager. And he goes after Worrell in a number of paragraphs. And he says, I quote, this is Vigano, the cardinal, Worrell, the cardinal lies shamelessly and prevails upon his chancellor, Monsignor Antonicelli, to lie as well. And so that was like a 1-2, like a left and a right. And we all thought Worrell was gone and Worrell is back.
Yeah, it's like an odd modification of the maxim deny from coming from, you know, many of the same people that brought you never let catastrophe go to waste, except it's not even entailing the concept of denial. I mean, it's some mistakes were made, but let's paper over them while acknowledging, in at least in abstract, that mistakes were made. It's a new level of audacity. It's foreign to even the audacious sort of Chicago-style politics that we associate with you know, the last administration here. It's that bold. It's beyond. It's bolder than Saul Alinsky tactics to just say some mistakes were made, as Pope Francis wrote in this letter, but I want to talk about how you're great anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's weird. Not even saying, well, you did more good than bad. So you kind of, on the scales, you're kind of, you know, a plus guy. It's not even that. This is praising him. Also, it makes him administrator of the archdiocese, which means he's not technically the ordinary, but he is. He has full power over the Archdiocese of D.C. So, yes, he resigns, but functionally, he has the same job. And this could last for 2 months or it could last for 2 years. He still remains on the cathedra, on the throne of the Cathedral of Washington, D.C. as a cardinal archbishop. Change the name on the business or change the title on the business card, but functionally, all that power is there. And one thing I'm concerned about is, what if you were a priest in D.C. and you spoke out against Wuerl and you knew Wuerl was going down and now Wuerl's resigned, but he's back and he has all the same power, just a different title. What do you think is going to happen to those priests?
Not good. They'll be they'll receive the Cardinal Supich treatment or something like it.
Yeah.
Normally the way we incentivize good, honest whistleblowers is with the sort of natural law proposition that, yeah, if you take down this guy, if you topple this evil regime, you're not going to have to deal with them afterwards. In Francis' church, if Pope Francis likes a guy, he'll flat out keep him there. It's the Pironism we've talked about, you know, that lurks behind every one of these talks and videos you and I have done. It doesn't have its equivalent in American politics. Like I said, even the most audacious community organizing, which begins to strike a chord, kind of like these Latin American politics, they're not audacious enough. In America, even in Chicago politics, we expect someone, if they have the equivalent of an operative like a Cardinal Wuerl on their side, they're going to have to feed him to the dogs. And Pope Francis does not roll that way.
No, he doesn't. He's brave. All right, I want to look at the letter. So Pope Francis, not only did he accept the resignation of Wuerl, he issued a letter which kind of, you know, covers over the cracks. And the key paragraph that I thought that Pope Francis composed as an homage to Cardinal Wuerl is this. He says, quote, "You have sufficient elements to justify," and here justify is like in air quotes in the letter. I don't know if that's like in the original or not. Yeah, I mean, is this the first? Because you don't need to quote that, but he does put the quotes on it. So I'll read it again. "You have sufficient elements to justify your actions and distinguish between what it means to cover up crimes or not deal with problems and to commit some mistakes. However, your nobility has led you not to choose this way of defense. Of this, I am proud and thank you." What do you think about that, Timothy?
Like I said, when I first read this, I was a little bit heartened by the fact that he uses the scare quotes over justify. I was like, oh, he sounds like one of us. Like, yeah, you can justify your actions, big guy. Unfortunately, I think it's just bad grammar, Pope Francis. And I don't know why else you would put the scare quotes there. So like any minor solace I've taken in this entire pontificate, it doesn't really turn out so it's cold comfort. And I'm mainly just joking anyway. But your nobility has led you to choose not to choose the way of defense. I'm not sure how you say that as you rehabilitate his image. You're telling the man who's under the gun, Cardinal Wuerl, that you're going to be rehabilitating his image. And then this morning we find out that the Archdiocese of D.C. is rehabilitating his image.
Right, running an ad. And yeah, he appears on CNN and defends himself. He put up a website to defend himself. He had a meeting with his presbyters to defend himself. So lots of defense is going on. So Pope Francis is just sort of, you know, conjuring a reality that doesn't seem to be there to us in America. I've seen world defending himself over and over. And here the Pope's saying, hey, you know, you could have defended yourself and you didn't. And for this, I'm proud of you and I thank you.
Right. Which isn't quite paternal anyway, because I mean, you know, your son, you don't expect not to defend himself if he's righteously accused of something. And so it's sort of doubly wrong, right? Not only is he defending himself, but he's defending himself against righteous claims. And it's a really odd thing and then he goes on and he's saying that you make clear the intent to put God's project first before any kind of personal project. The irony is too thick, man. Yeah. I mean, like, what do you expect us to do? Everything that one would look at and take issue with, whether it's Cardinal Wuerl or McCarrick or any of these guys, there is careerism there, which Pope Francis used to talk a great deal about his first 2 years in the chair. And it's careerism, clearly, and self-service, and it's the opposite of the common good. And it's like Pope Francis seems to be making an irony checklist here. Everything you would ever think of accomplishing, accusing Cardinal Wuerl of, by way of characterization, he's going and saying, oh, you're great at this. You're great at this.
Yeah, I mean, doesn't this go back to our interview on Francis and Peronism, that instead of, like you said in the beginning of this video, instead of just denying an accusation, you just turn around and double down on the exact opposite.
Right. Right.
That's kind of scary. Most people don't experience that. Like, if you get your hand caught in the cookie jar, you say, oh, I'm sorry, Mom, you know, don't punish, don't tell Dad, right? But this is more like, my hand's not in the cookie jar.
Yeah.
I just made cookies for the whole family and put them in this jar. You know, like, it's a really bold turnaround.
Right.
And I think we need to get used to it, because we're seeing this a lot globally, not just here in America.
Right. Yeah. Not my hand's not in the cookie jar. What do you say? And it's that gaslighting thing that,
yes,
it's a term that seems to be, growing in popularity, kind of like just any of these. I don't know if it's a neologism. I think it's an old 1940s term, but everyone's saying it. And there are a couple articles, 2 weeks ago about Pope Francis gaslighting. His papacy, uses gaslighting. It was on 1 Peter 5 about 13, 14 days ago. That seems to be a key element. It's the only tool at the disposal of somebody who's caught with the hand in the cookie jar that's going to say, no, not only is my hand not in this cookie jar, you can either believe me or your own lying eyes, right? But I'm actually great at I'm great at restraint. I never grab cookies out of the cookie jar. If you think so, there must be something wrong with you. Dig. There must be something wrong with your psychology. It's really, really bold, and this is the pronism we've been talking about the whole time.
Yeah,
the gaslighting.
Yeah. And it's not just
dictatorial.
Like, it's not just like, you know, you chose not to defend. However, your nobility has led you not to choose the way of defense. So, I mean, he's saying that this man is noble. He's really above reproach, because he puts God's project first, not his own. I want to go back to this word gaslighting, because we use it all the time. It actually goes back to an old movie, and the movie's called Gaslight and has Ingrid Bergman in it. And I haven't ever seen it. I've only heard about it. But have you heard of this movie, Timothy?
Yes. Yeah.
Have you seen it?
I haven't seen it.
Okay. So apparently the husband is just constantly telling the wife that what she's experiencing, she's not experiencing, and basically drives her mad. Isn't that the plot?
Yeah. It's very similar to Overboard, the old Kurt Russell, Goldie Hawn movie, where he literally gaslights into her into thinking she's his wife, and it's I think the same basic concept. Yeah,
yeah. Here's the original title stems from the dimming of the gas lights in the house that happened when the husband was using the gas lights in the flat above while searching for jewels belonging to a woman he had murdered. So the husband's a psychopath and the gas lights dim whenever he's upstairs. But she's picking up on the cues of the crimes and he's like, no, that's not the case. And basically trying to brainwash her and abuse her in that way. And that's what sociopaths do. Like really crazy people say, no, I wasn't abusing you. You know, we were just holding hands. Or, no, I've always loved you. I would never do that to you. That never happened.
What makes all the, because I looked it up after the article came out on 1 Peter 5. It's associated with sociopaths at the higher end, but at the lower end, they say it makes every checklist for narcissists. It's right. In the narcissist playbook where you could say, because I mean, apply it here to what's happening. A narcissist takes every conceivable moment and several moments that aren't really even conceivable to anyone else to aggrandize themselves. And that's what this defense of the close collaborators is. It's really an aggrandizement of the figurehead. And you never, ever, ever, it's a combination. It's a potent combination of all the things we've talked about here today. Deny, always use even bad things to aggrandize yourself. And then if someone accuses you of something that's probably a legitimate weakness, just say, no, that's a strength. What are you talking about? It's very difficult to countenance.
Yeah.
Strange. Yeah.
While you're speaking there, I just rolled down on the site. I was looking on gaslighting and it says, here are the 7 signs of gaslighting. So let's just go through these real quick. 1, withholding information from the victim.
Right.
Okay. Check. 2,
check.
Countering information to fit the abuser's perspective. Check.
Yeah.
3, discounting information. 4, verbal abuse, usually in the form of jokes.
The evil one.
Yeah. And this is good because you can always just say, I was joking or I wasn't referring to you. So it gives you deniability in the accusation against the person.
Remember when Francis even, this doesn't fit perfectly, when he even said JP2 was great, I am the devil.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, I was joking. It's like, why would you joke about that?
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. Okay, so the next one, 5, blocking and diverting the victim's attention from outside sources. Yeah. 6, trivializing the victim's worth. And 7, undermining the victim by gradually weakening them and their thought process. So those are the 7 signs of gaslighting.
Usually there's 1 or 2 like whiffs, right? But I mean, that's like 7 out of 7. That's
I mean, if we bracket just, you know, the pontificate and the curia, and we just look at what goes on with clerical abuse, I mean, withholding information, countering information from the abuser's perspective, discounting their information, this is all over the Pennsylvania grand jury report. And it wasn't just the priest doing it. It was the bishop doing it. And in many of these cases, that bishop was named Donald Wuerl.
Right.
And here he is. He is still a cardinal. He is administrator of the Archdiocese of D.C. still. And he's in the Congregation for Bishops, which means he will be choosing bishops, not only in America, but all over the world.
Wow. Yeah. Horrible.
Horrible. I'm going to close here with the final paragraph from Pope Francis to Wuerl. He says, "Dear brother, I make my own the words of Sirach, quote, you who fear the Lord, trust in him, and your reward will not be lost." So, in a sense, I think the Pope, who's the vicar of Christ, is saying, hey, don't worry, your reward is not going to be lost, Wuerl. You're gonna stay okay. You're part of my group of friends. You're in the inner circle of trust. You're not going anywhere. And I'd like for you to close on this, Timothy, to mention, how does McCarrick still fit in this? It looks like they've jumped the hurdle of the Pennsylvania grand jury report, and they're rehabilitating Wuerl to be noble, not a defender, having made some mistakes, as the Pope says, right? So that kind of clears whirl of the Pennsylvania has passed as a bishop in Pittsburgh. But McCarrick is still a wild card. He's no longer a cardinal, but there's now allegedly a investigation into the life and crimes of McCarrick. And Vigano's accused Worrell of knowing about sanctions put on by Pope Benedict. Can Worrell still survive if something bad comes out on McCarrick? And are we going to hear anything that bad on McCarrick?
What the lay faithful need to get their minds around is that for however long or short this pontificate continues, yes, any of this seemingly unlikely stuff administratively that Pope Francis deigns to continue can continue. So it's like, can he rehabilitate Worrell? It's like, yeah, because Francis seems to not mind the fact that in the English-speaking world, or at least America, his ratings have taken like the biggest dip in the history of popularity rankings, and he doesn't mind. I think you said this last time we spoke, or maybe by text. He's written off America, and public opinion is the kind of bulwark that keeps gladiators alive. You know, when you have a monarch or a sovereign that cares enough about public opinion to keep the gladiator alive, as it were. Francis doesn't care. Pope Francis seems to, you know, be living in a bubble. And therefore, when it comes
to... Hold on. Do you think... Maybe Francis doesn't care about America, but do you think that... Ultimately, I think when Francis goes to bed at night, he thinks the world loves me.
I mean, it's kind of like what politics over the last, you know, 2.5 years have shown. As long as you have your partisans, you know, to keep you warm and fuzzy at night. And I mean, even the good guys do this. It doesn't really matter whether it's a vocal large minority or a vocal majority, a slight majority. As long as you have enough people around to tell you you're great, particularly if you're have these narcissistic tendencies, you're going to be okay. And it's uniquely potent. I mean, this is uniquely true in the case of true sovereignties like the pontiff. No one, he's beyond reproach.
Yeah. There's no recall. There's no, you know, new election after 4 years. He can't be deposed. So he's there.
Right. Right. And even to go back to something else you'd mentioned, we called out last time in our last video, like, okay, they just announced 2 Saturdays ago that they were going to look into their McCarrick files. And I think I said something to the effect of this will not be anything approaching a bona fide mea culpa. Somehow they're going to divorce their McCarrick files, whatever they turn up, and their culpability. And look what they, Church Militant reports that they're doing. They're saying, McCarrick, we're going to tie him more to JP2, who has this, you know, who elevated McCarrick. And we're going to distance him from both Worrell and Francis and any of our other operators. And that it just,
right.
No one's Nostradamus here. It's just, this is how they operate in this period. Yeah.
Well, great. Well, Timothy, thanks for being on, author of Catholic Republic. If you enjoy these videos, please like and subscribe, share them around, share them on Facebook so people get clarity on what's going on in the Catholic Church globally and here in America. Till then, God bless.